Blog Talk Radio.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park. The RSV family. My usual suspects with me. Hot baseball topic. We're just gonna jump right into it. I always tell it to you.
Gambling.
What do
you think about gambling?
It's
not gambling when you know you're
gonna
win.
You're not coming out late. The RSV family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park. RSG family, welcome back to another episode of Inside the Park. You know, we only got four teams left in this baseball season, but we got a lot to talk about. There's so much going on in these two series, and we can't wait to dive into them for you. But before we do that, I want to say what's up to Mike and Hank, and we got to talk about these teams that have been put out. And I know it may be rough for you, Mike. I know you probably got that brew, that cold brew on tap. But can you give the listeners anything, man, right now? What's next for the Reds, Mike?
It's unfortunate the entire baseball season is over right now. I don't think there's any baseball since last Wednesday, because that's pretty much how it works in Cincinnati. Once your team's done, you're done. And most people don't know this, but the baseball season usually ends sometime in early September. But there's good things to look forward to. As Cincinnati Reds fans go, you got a young team, you got a young pitching staff, you got an ownership that's motivated to win. So I think it's a bright future. I think this is a team that's going to contend year in and year out.
Bright future. So you're on board with the Dusty Baker 2-year extension.
I think it's fine. We talked a little bit about this with the Tigers, and it's not so much you're going to get rid of Dusty Baker, but who are you going to bring in? You know, who's going to replace him? So, the options that are out there, nobody really motivates me to any great extent. The Reds haven't been grooming some, super-duper young replacement at AAA, so I don't have an issue with Baker. I don't think anyone can really mess with him this year. He played with the cards he was dealt with, which was almost zero bench for half the year. Drew Stubbs Zach Coates started hitting 1-2, both with OPPs underneath 300 at the top of the lineup, and they still won 97 games. So how do you mess with that?
Wow. I'm shocked to hear you saying this. It sounds like you're going a little easy on him. I mean, doesn't Dusty set the lineup? Isn't he the one who's putting these guys with under 350 OBP at the top of the lineup? Wasn't Dusty the guy? I mean, I think we were down, three runs? You got two on, and he sends the guys?
Did you just drop a wee?
I dropped a wee because I had money on the Reds, and I lost all my money. Damn it. It was a wee.
You know what? If we're gonna critique the playoff loss in Game 5, first of all, you give a grand slam to Buster Posey. That's problem number one. But two, the Reds had runners on base the entire series. 3, 4, and 5, they had opportunities in every game to score, and they couldn't come through with the clutch hit. So, I don't think the manager was an issue here. He had to try to motivate the team a little bit and get them going. Was he aggressive? Yeah, if it works out, it's fantastic. It didn't work out, oh well. But the Reds had some real holes in their lineup, Drew Stubbs is the type of player. Now Zach Coates was a rookie this year. I'm fine with him. And you know what? You probably could have batted him eighth. But Drew Stubbs is a guy that drove you nuts because if he could just make contact, it would be great. And he was such an upgrade in center field that The Reds felt that they could play with a more defensive-oriented lineup. They went that direction. They missed, you know? They missed. You know, how many different times could they have won Game 3? It just didn't go their way. And I'm not going to blame Dusty Baker for that.
Hey, because this is the mic you expected to hear today.
I really did. You know, I thought we were going to have him on suicide watch tonight, you know, but I guess he's had time since Game 5 to, you know, recover. So, you know, on behalf of, you know, us that's still playing baseball, Mike, we offer you our condolences. I also want to say, RJ, that, you know, the baseball guys was really looking out for you and I tonight, because I can let you know I had planned on being very distracted before it decided to rain here in southeast Michigan and keep going to postpone the game. So, you know, you got my full attention now because I was going to be going nuts because we'd probably be in about the sixth or seventh inning right about now. And I don't know where we would have been. But, no, I didn't expect to hear Mike be so positive. But I think he got a reason to be.
I think it is the layoff because I text Mike during the game and he was very short. And he may have cursed me a couple times in his text. So I think it's time to soften him up a bit.
I know,
you know
that's
there was
right.
An article written by C. Trent Rosenkrantz, who used to be a local reporter in Cincinnati. Now he's the baseball blogger for CBS Sports, and it talks about the mentality of Cincinnati sports fans and how it's an entire city and fan base, whether it's the Reds, whether it's the Bengals, whether it's the Bearcats, that just always waits for the other shoe to fall. Okay, and you know the Bengals has found new ways to lose games over the last 20-some years, and they continue to do so. It's just heartbreak. You know, the Reds, the same way. You know, you win 96 games in 99. You got to win 2 out of 3 against the Brewers, who are horrible, and you can't do it. You get a playoff game at home, and you lose it to the Mets. They get swept by Philadelphia. The Bearcats, they got their one team, the best team they had in the last 50 years, Kenyon Martin, Pete Michael, Steve Logan, Kenny Satterfield. And what happened to the first round of Conference USA playoffs? Kenny Martin breaks their leg in basketball. He breaks his leg, all right? So we're kind of conditioned to be punished, to be martyrs. It's a little bit of a masochistic society, and I know Detroit has been that way, you know, until lately with the Tigers. But, you know, we live and learn. I learned a long time ago that, you know, you can't let your livelihood or your state of mind rest on the fate of the sports teams you follow because they don't win that often.
There
you
go.
Sound like somebody who's had time to think about what they were going to say, RJ.
The kinder, gentler Mike.
That's right. You got to let it go. You know, you got to let it go. If it was meant to be, they would have been there. And you
right.
know what? That's not like physician's advice to me, Mike.
The Tigers are up 3-0. If we lose this series, I ain't letting it go.
I ain't letting it go either. I need therapy. I'm going to let you know right now.
I ain't letting nothing go.
But in the end, I guess it was the same thing that plagued them all year, which was clutch hitting, and they couldn't do it. I wish Dusty would have had a quicker hook with Latos in game five. But I'll tell you what, you know, that was a mid-afternoon game, so I snuck out of work for lunch, and I sat there for innings 1 through 4. All right, and I'm thinking, I got to go back to work. It's 0-0, it's cool, whatever. And Latos is looking good. I get back to my office, I click on my phone. It's 6-0. How do I score
yeah.
6 between lunch and the office? I don't know, all right? And therefore, I figure since I didn't see it happen, it didn't really happen. It must not have happened.
And then, Mike, let me ask you a question. Given what you were talking about, do the Reds now get into the Josh Hamilton sweepstakes? Need another bat?
I read an article on that today where they were saying that the Brewers were actually looking at putting some interest towards him because they have Jerry Nairn, who managed the Reds when Josh Hamilton was there. And it was suggested that he would fill a lot of holes in that lineup for him. And you know what? As a Cincinnati fan, I'll tell you, when Josh Hamilton was in Cincinnati, at no point did he piss off the fan base, okay? Josh Hamilton was still that ESPN success story, you know, outside the lines at that point. So he has a lot of fans in Cincinnati. He behaved himself wonderfully. He was always the guy out there signing autographs and just doing a great job. So I don't think they would have an issue from a fan base standpoint bringing him back in. I wonder about the contract and what you're going to go do, Scott Boras being his agent. I don't know that's a friendly guy to sign at this point, but if you think about a lineup that could possibly rival the Tigers, okay, and you're talking about Brandon Phillips, Joey Votto, Jay Bruce, Ryan Ludwig, and Josh Hamilton, that's a nice lineup. That's a real nice.
Oh, yeah. So are you saying you'd be happy with him on the squad?
Oh, I'd be, yeah, of course. Absolutely. If you tell me my Bruce Stubbs or Josh Hamilton, okay. That's fine. I'll take it.
All right. Hank, you see the Nationals getting back next year? What's next for those guys?
I think the Nationals take a humongous step back. Let me tell you something. It's going to resonate decades, what the Nationals did to their fan
base.
I'm saying decades. At least one. And let me tell you why. Okay, what the Nationals did to their fan base was deplorable with Strasburg. What we know about baseball is that there's always that one team that makes a run that nobody expects, okay? And a lot of things went right for the Nationals, and they were primed to take the National League, okay? The fact that it came down to two outs in the last inning and, you know, they lost that game to the Cardinals, that's going to resonate hard for a young team. Moreover now, you've had some guys that, you know, they had some hope. They had some older guys on that team. You know, Bryce Harper is nice. Strasburg is nice. But you have to ask yourself, can Jason Worth give you what he gave you this year? You know, they've got some other pieces in there. Gio Gonzalez, can he give you another year like he did this year? You know, where do they go? Plus, you have to ask yourself about the psyche of this team for next year. It's going to be tough for the Nats simply because of what happened this year. Had they just lost, maybe not. And I know a lot of folks say, well, you know, one thing that happened last year don't carry over, but I disagree. And I think that's going to be tough for them. I wouldn't be surprised that if they got into the Alex Rodriguez sweepstakes, you know, to get another at bat, to, you know, just to bring some more cachet to that team maybe. But I think that with the way the National League is shaping up for next year, it's going to be tough for them. I really do think so.
Keep in mind, listeners, Hank was the guy who had condemned the Nationals for dead at the start of the year as well. So there is that. Mike, are the Nats doomed to decades of futility, as Hank put it?
No, and there's one reason for that. It's pitching. You know, they've got a really, really strong pitching staff, and that's going to put them in a lot of games next year. I think they can improve offensively, add a piece or two to that, and they should be fine there. And I'll throw something out to you. I may jump ahead in the agenda, but I think A-Rod's ripe for the picking to have out of New York if you're willing to pay a little bit of money, but not too much in prospects. How'd you like to put him in that lineup? You got to find a spot for him. You're not taking out Zimmerman at third, but, you know, maybe think about that in Washington because they can afford him.
Right. Help me think about it. Where are you playing A-Rod? Zimmerman's at third. You got Espinoza at short. Where would they put A-Rod? Outfield?
First base? You could put him at first. Yeah, I think you put him at first.
Yep.
Okay. Get a little creative there.
Well, I mean, what do they got? LaRoche at first? Is that right? Or who am I thinking?
Yeah, they've got LaRoche there. But
okay.
You're assuming that A-Rod's going to want to do a position move. I mean, he does have a no trade with the Yankees, so he has to agree to any trade.
Right, and at this point, if he's funny, you know, why would he want to stay in New York? I mean, get the hell out. It's pretty clear what's going on there, that, you know, they're moving things around, and, you know, he can go to Washington. It's a major market. It's a team on the rise. Why not?
I agree with you. I mean, you look at the fact that if by chance, hypothetically, that the Yankees get swept, okay, that's not going to be the same Yankee team that comes back next year. I mean, even though they did a lot of great things this year, there's going to be more questions than answers. This is going to be the second time, 2 years in a row, they got bounced by the Tigers, all right, after winning the division, the East, which is supposed to be, you know, one of the toughest divisions in the American League. So there's going to be some questions to be left there. He's not part of their plans. If he's not going to play in the playoffs, when is he going to play? So I'm with you, Mike. Well, I think that he becomes a – I think he goes to the National League. I think he's – a change of scenery may do him some good. But I don't see him being back in New York next year.
I don't think there's any way he goes to the National League because at this stage in his career, he needs somewhere where they can – the person who shells out money for A-Rod is, for the next 5 years, is going to bank on the fact that he'll be able to DH at a certain point in time. For that reason, I don't see anybody in the National League willing to take on much of his contract for 5 years, knowing that his play in the field is diminishing.
Yeah, but if you put him at first, I mean, who watched Fred McGriff, who couldn't bend over at the end
right.
of his career?
Exactly.
Play first. I mean, you can play first base, can't you? Prince Fielder played first base.
And he's still agile. He's playing third. He started off as a shortstop. I think he could do that for a National League team, especially one that needs a bat that's on the verge of the playoffs.
You guys are forgetting one thing, though, about stars. They have egos. You're asking A-Rod to accept he has a no-trade, which he's earned for his years of being an excellent player. He has a no-trade. You think after he's taken this hit, where everybody has seen him at his lowest, he's sitting on the bench. He knows he can play. I just heard him say in an interview, the Yankees lineup is better when I'm in it. And I tend to agree with him. You think that after he's taken this hit, he would agree to go somewhere where they're saying, we don't think you have it anymore at third, we're going to move you to first, with his ego?
Yeah, because right now, You got Eric Chavez, who I thought was out of the baseball, playing third base for the Yankees in a game four in which the elimination game. He's been pinch hit for. I mean, either you're going to fire Joe Girardi or you're going to keep A-Rod. It's not going to be. They're not going to coexist. I can't see them starting that next year. I think what you're going to have the first time he pulls A-Rod for something next year, that's going to destroy that whole season. That can
right, and
shot.
I'm not saying the Yankees, I'm agreeing with you. If the Yankees do move him, I'm just saying I don't think he'll accept a deal where he knows he's not going to be able to prove himself on the left side of the infield. I don't think he's going to say, I'll go to this team, even though I know you guys don't believe I can still play third base. And you
I'm
want
thinking
to move
that
bats
right now are more paramount to A-Rod than his fielding. I think his stick is what anything else.
I agree. And one of the reasons I think the Nationals is a nice fit is, first of all, the Yankees have never been A-Rod's team. They're Jeter's team. And they're going to be Jeter's team until they have to wheel him out of there. You bring him over to the Nationals, who have a budget that can afford him, first of all. But he becomes the icon, along with Strasburg, on that team. He becomes the veteran. He becomes the draw 4 days a week when Strasburg's not pitching. How's that for an ego boost right there in front of 45,000 fans every night?
Okay. Hey, Hank and I talked about the rumor earlier, and the rumor is a much better and viable option for A-Rod than Washington. I don't see him going to Washington. I mean, for those of you, let me back up. The rumor is that A-Rod is going to be traded to the Marlins, where he's from. He has a house in Miami. He can play third base, and Miami has money to throw on as well. You got Miami in one hand and Washington in another. Who do you think A-Rod's picking?
Well, I think if he wants to win, which hopefully is what he's looking at, you're not going to Miami. Miami just try to do a salary dump after 1 year into this experiment. Washington has a much better team than Miami, and he's more likely to win there.
That guy loves Miami. He went to his college there. He lives there. I don't think there's any chance he would choose Washington, D.C. over Miami.
Okay.
Then what you're saying is that he's just trying to wrap up his career and do what he has to do for A-Rod, and that winning at that point just becomes second because he's got a better chance to go to a contender especially a young team like Washington with his playoff experience, you know, be a draw. You know, all eyes would be on him regardless of what team he goes on. And let's face it, the Miami Marlins is a train wreck, okay?
And I got to call a flag on the play. You can't call the Nationals a contender after you just said they'd have a decade of futility.
But that's what I'm saying now. We're talking hypothetically if A-Rod comes to that team, okay?
And he'll save them? He'll save them and they'll be able to get over this decade that you're condemning them to?
Okay, what I'm saying is they would have to make some moves. Okay. If they stay the way they are right now, they are train wrecked. Okay. But if you go,
but A-Rod will put them over the top.
I'm not saying he's gonna put them over the top. They're not over the top now. But I'm saying to you that you're talking about two elements there that's got something to prove. Okay. The Washington Nationals and A-Rod. Okay. Both of them go back into next year with a chip on their shoulder. It would be interesting to see. Now, if it don't happen. What I say is stands, but I'm talking hypothetically. I think that if they get into that and get him there, there is something there that could work. We'll see. I'm not making that prediction now. They're going to get over the top. But I'm just saying it makes sense for him.
Let's get into a little American League baseball. The feel-good story of the playoffs, the Oakland A's are done. They're out. Bounced by the Tigers. But I want to throw it to you guys and ask you guys a real simple question. I mean, you heard a lot about Moneyball was dead. Oakland hasn't been good for a long time, and it seems like they just came out of nowhere. Billy Bean threw some pieces together, and he did it a different way than he did it back in the Moneyball days, shall we say. So Mike, the way that Billy Bean threw this team together, A lot of platoon splits, a lot of guys who hit well with righties played when there was a righty on the mound. He used a lot of platoon splits. We'll just throw it out there, and he relied on a lot of young pitching. Is this the new Moneyball? Did Oakland get lucky, or is Moneyball dead? What are your thoughts on Oakland and what they did this year?
Well, I think what they did was fantastic. We talked about team ball. And their ability to come out there and just win games as a team without superstars. But unfortunately, in my opinion, it's tough to replicate that year after year. Baltimore, I think, falls into that a little bit. When you win that many one-run games, when you have that little of a run differential, you know, the odds kind of come back and forth on you. And, you know, they hit a lot of key base hits this year. They got a lot of key outs on defense. I think they'll be competitive, but you know, I don't think that's sustainable. If you talk about money, now, the thing that always gets me about Moneyball, okay, is that we always ignore the backdrop of Hudson, Mulder, and Zito on the pitching side of Moneyball.
Right.
Okay, that was the base of their team, their pitching staff. Okay, the rest was score a couple runs and we're going to be okay. And we can do that with some mediocre players. We can do that. We can get on base. We can scratch out an extra half run a game, and we're going to be okay. The Oakland A's do not have that pitching staff, at least not one with a track record that those guys have. So I think they're just as likely to be under 500 next year as they are to be in contention for the playoffs.
Hank, are you an Oakland A's believer for next year, or?
No, I'm not. I think the A's snuck up on a lot of people. And just like anything else with these baseball seasons that we've seen over the years, a team or two has a tendency to get hot and have an unbelievable season. And I think that's what happened with the A's. You know, Billy Bean made a lot of moves simply to dump payroll. You know, a lot of his stars that he dumped last year actually had decent seasons, like Gio Gonzalez. But I think that with the A's, you have to have a lot of things go right, okay, on a consistent basis. And I think you had a lot of kids out there, that rookies, that just had unbelievable seasons. And what do we know about baseball? That second season, once they figure out who the hell you are, usually is not as good as that first one. And so you're looking at a lot of guys that now other teams have got tape on. They know how to pitch them. They know how to play them. And I think that's going to hurt them a lot going into next season. I think, again, as Mike said, I expect them to be competitive. but I expect them to kind of come back to earth next year.
And nobody's mentioned it. Let's not forget, you know, Angels with a full season of Mike Trout still going to be around. You still got Texas to contend with. So they kind of had a bit of a perfect storm setup this year. So I definitely agree it is going to be tough. And it's going to be tough for them to take out the Angels next year, I believe.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
How about Baltimore? Have we seen the last of them in the AL East?
I'll take it. You know what? I think when you look at Baltimore, the one thing that was rather disappointing with Baltimore, they got some incredible pitching performances in the playoffs and actually had some good pitching performances down the stretch, but just could not produce enough runs to win. You have to ask yourself, if you're a Baltimore, you know, can you get a bat in there or two to try to contend for the playoffs next year? Then, but again, when you look at Baltimore, you had a lot to go right with them as well. Now, Buck Showalter is a proven manager, and he'll have those guys ready to contend next year. But you have to ask yourself again, okay, you got the Angels that we've talked about. You've got Texas that you're talking about. You've always got that you got the Rays, and then you've always got that team that nobody expects that all of a sudden has an incredible season. You know, the Indians have got Terry Francona over there. Does Kansas City now become that team ain't nobody talking about? The Tigers now is a playoff team now every year. And then, oh, yeah, the Yankees, and then Boston. It's going to be tough again for Baltimore. You know, when you look at that roster, nobody scares you. You know, on a night to night basis. So that's going to be tough again for them too next season.
Yeah, I think Mike's argument against the A's applies to Baltimore as well with the run differential. You kind of look for them to regress as well because they did not have a very large run difference. I think it may have been right around 10 or 12 runs.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right about that, Mike?
Yes, you are.
Far out. Well, let's keep it moving, and let's talk about the teams that are still in it. Like we said earlier, there's two good series going on right now. The one that's intriguing me is this San Francisco-St. Louis series, probably because I do not want to see the Cardinals again in the World Series, assuming the Tigers make it. But let's talk about what the Giants need to do. And there's been a lot of discussion about who they're going to start game four. It's either between Tim Lincecum or Barry Zito. As our regular listeners know, Tim Lincecum had a pretty un-Tim Lincecum type year. He's come around in the playoffs. He's thrown pretty damn good baseball out of the as a reliever in the playoffs. But he may be getting his chance to start game four. I want to ask the Inside the Park crew what you guys would do. Would you start Lincecum? Would you start Zito? How are you handling this pitching staff in game four? And we'll ask the National League guy first. Mike, what are you doing?
You know, I'm going to start Lincecum. And he was lights out against the Reds in that series in a relief role. So there's some school of thought here that would say, okay, why mess with that? Leave him in that long relief role. He can come in there. He can throw a couple innings here or there. I'm a big fan, especially at this point in the season. You don't leave any bullets in the gun. And you don't leave a guy on your bench thinking, if we need him, he's there and it's good. But what if you never need him? And instead you throw Barry Zito, who was very hittable in the playoff series against the Reds, and he's been very hittable throughout this year. So I think the way Lincecum's throwing the ball right now, and I believe he is starting game four for them, you got to throw him. He was without a doubt a top three pitcher for them in that series against the Reds.
Hank, let me throw this out there as an option. You tell me what you think. Mike Matheny has shown a propensity to base his lineup based on the starting pitcher, i.e., if you've got the lefty in Zito starting the game, he's going to throw a lot of right-handed bats in the lineup. What do you think about starting Zito, you get those right-handed bats in the lineup. You let Zito go through one time, two, three innings, and then you come back with Lincecum for the rest of the game, or as long as he can go. That way he's still playing in his relieving position that he's been thriving at, and he's throwing to a bunch of righties. What do you think about that option?
Only thing is you've got to, if you're the manager, you've got to have that confidence that Zito is going to get you through those first few innings. Okay, and now, you know, and let's look at game four. All right, right now they're in a rain delay, and it's 3-1 St. Louis. Let's say St. Louis goes on and win that game. You really don't have a whole lot of room to play with. And let's face it, you know, you in the playoffs, you start getting performances that you ain't used to getting, or all of a sudden guys start to find their swerve. You got to roll with them. And if that be the case, I'm going with Lincecum. I mean, it might make sense to do at another date or another time, but I would feel more comfortable to say I'm going with the guy that got me here. He's playing it. He's getting it done. I don't even want to fool with Zito right now. Zito, I think that his best days is behind him, and I wouldn't want to go into a game four, when I'm down 2-1.
Okay. Mike, what do you think about the creativity there? I mean, if Zito gets roughed up in the second inning, you just have a quick hook. You go right to Lincecum. But you're still burning those right-handed bats that Matheny threw in the lineup. What do you think? Can I get you on board?
And then I agree with the thought, but Zito, or Lincecum, is a guy that came in the, I want to say the fourth inning, and he pitched, what, four or five innings, and he struck out seven guys, something like that?
Yeah.
He was throwing lights out. So, I mean, if
right.
you've got Lincecum back right now, even if it's for a game or two, you got to throw him. You got to throw him. You know, it's kind of like, I always compare it to fantasy football, right, that if you've got the guy, your number one pick, you don't bench him. You don't look who he's playing. You better play him. You drafted him number one. Same with the pitcher who's throwing lights out with the type of talent that Lincecum has. If he's on a roll, I don't care who he's playing. You throw Albert Pujols against him. I don't care. Pitch him.
Right. All right. I think I know what you'll say because we know you hate the Cardinals, Mike, so we'll go to Hank. Did you catch the Matt Halliday slide in the second base where he didn't start his slide until he was well past the base? Took Scudero out, and Scudero injured his hip. Did you catch that?
I saw that, yeah.
Fair foul. What were your thoughts on that slide?
I think that Halliday was trying to make a play to break up the double play. I don't think Halliday is a dirty player. Now, I know Mike might disagree, but I know that before the game today, Halliday, you know, the talk with Scudero said it was all good, his bad. But that's baseball. I mean, you know, we've seen it all the time. I mean, that there was made a lot of that about that play because Scudero was positioned behind the bag, which is supposed to be the safest spot when you're trying to make that turn. And Halliday came behind the bag before he even started his slide. But how many times have we seen guys go 3-5 feet outside of the bag to try to take out a second baseman with spikes high? So I think it was a baseball play. I just think it was an aggressive play. I don't think it was a dirty play, but this is the playoffs, okay? I mean, if you ain't trying, you're losing.
I agree. And unfortunately, when we are in the playoffs, everything gets magnified. But like you said, you see this kind of stuff all the time. What do you think, Hank? Or Mike, I'm sorry.
First of all, the Cardinals are a bunch of cheaters, always will be a bunch of cheaters, and that's all there is to say about it. Second of all, when you play the Cardinals, it's like playing an entire team full of John Starks, all right? He's going to scratch. He's going to elbow. He's going to bite anytime anybody's looking. He's gonna try to do something else, and if you touch him, he's gonna flail. You know what I mean? He's going to get some acting awards out there as well. The Cardinals are like that, bunch of whiny pair of but they play hard. They play just inside the rule book, okay? But they're going to complain every bit if it doesn't go their way, and I can't stand them for that. I can't stand it. Do I think the play was dirty? No, but it, you know what? It was a typical Cardinal play, and if you're a Cardinal fan, you love it.
just like if you were a Knicks fan, you really loved John Starks, and if you were any other team in the NBA, you're waiting for that guy to get decked. That's how I feel about the Cardinals.
Well, why don't you tell us how you really feel,
man? Hey, I was about to say the same thing. Don't hold back now.
Jeez. Then I've got to come at you with this next question. Unfortunately, Carlos Beltran, he went down with a knee injury today. But prior to that, he has continued his unbelievably hot postseason hitting. Right now, I believe his numbers are better than Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig in the postseason. The guy is putting on a hitting clinic, as he typically tends to do in the postseason. What I wanted to ask you is, A, do you believe that a player's postseason success can tip a guy over into the Hall of Fame? Say a guy who's had a, you know, he's on the fringe of being a Hall of Famer, but he's just been lights out in the playoffs. Can that tip a guy into the Hall of Fame? And then what are your thoughts about Beltran as a Hall of Famer? And we'll get the resident Cardinal hater first.
The first answer is, of course, yes. In fact, postseason success sometimes dictates Hall of Fame legacies more than regular season success. So the answer to that is yes. What may hurt him a little bit is he plays in the extended playoff, right, where there's a lot of playoff games, where there wasn't always a lot of playoff games, but now there is. There's a ton. So that sense of do or die right now for this series, that, you know, doesn't quite carry over the next. And when I look at Beltran, and you know what? He's been the Cardinals a year, so the hatred hasn't quite gone on to him yet. Don't get me wrong. I've got a serious dislike for him, but the hatred's not there. But, you know, we had that discussion about Hall of Fame or not with a couple other players earlier, and to me, you know, that's got to be a one-second answer for you. Hall of Famer, yes, no. And when Carlos Beltran's name comes up, I don't say yes. You know, he's not a no-brainer for me. And if you got to think about it, then they shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. Doesn't mean that, I mean, I could be wrong. If you look at the stats, you know, he definitely has an argument for it. But if you said 2 seconds, Carlos Beltran, who you got? And I go, no, not Hall of Famer.
Okay. And Hank, I'm going to get your opinion as well. But let me just throw out his postseason success before I let you answer, Hank. He has a batting average in the postseason of .378. His on-base percentage is an amazing .489. He's almost getting on base half of the time he's up at the plate. And he's slugging .838. Hank, I ask you, can postseason success put somebody over the edge? And is Beltran a Hall of Famer?
You know what? It should. If you're with a team, or if you're a part of a team or teams that can consistently in baseball get to the postseason, and every time you're there, you're showing out, I think that very much should play into Hall of Fame consideration. Having said that, though, it's going to take a lot for the Baseball Writers of Association to look at Carlos Beltran because you can't really identify him with any one team. You know, he's got some great numbers, but he's going to be borderline. You know, he's going to be one of those kind of players that, you know, he's got to do something great, just not pretty good. And right now, you know, when you look at him, you want to compare him to Hall of Famers and even playoff, you know, performers. You know, he's pretty good compared to what you're talking about as far as Hall of Fame numbers. So I think he's borderline. And if he gets in, it's going to be like on the last ballot or something like that.
And that's what I was saying. With these borderline guys, does his playoff performance push him over the edge? Because I agree, he doesn't have those numbers that pop out at you across the board, but he's a very borderline guy who is a beast in the postseason.
Yeah, but see, last year when the Cardinals won the World Series, Beltran wasn't there, right? So, I mean,
yeah, he has not won a World Series.
Well, yeah, that's my point, okay? When he comes after the fact. He had some good years with the Mets, Houston, but again, you know, it really in this case is going to have to be team success for him, you know, because he is a borderline, you know, player, and there's a lot of them out there just like him. I mean, Don Baylor is not in the Hall of Fame, and how many rings have he got?
A little before my time. Why don't you tell us, Hank?
Don Baylor, okay? Don Baylor
I
played.
I know he is.
He played with the Orioles. He played with all those great Yankees teams, okay?
He played with,
with
the Angels. I know
with
who
the
he
Angels.
Is, but, you know.
Oh, but that's before your time, Mr. Baseball Man, okay?
I know
all these players
for.
That you got. How you going to make an argument, RJ, about these borderline players that you don't know of any of? Come on now.
I'm asking you to teach me.
Okay. Jack Morris. Okay, you are you familiar with him?
I've heard of him, yes.
Okay. All right. Jack Morris had some incredible playoff numbers. Okay? One ring, everybody, but he's not a Hall of Famer.
All right, Mike, I heard your position. It's got to be a yes or no for you. Unfortunately, that's not how the Hall of Fame works. I mean, we get guys like Ron Santo who you know, they get in. So I'm going to ask you again, knowing what we know about the guys that do just get in, Carlos Beltran.
No. No.
He played for the Reds then.
Hey, Mike, do you remember watching that Don Baylor play?
Vaguely. I was just in the crib. I know Hank was probably in the bar at that point, but I was just in the crib.
Hey, wasn't he a Naked Gun with Reggie Jackson on the Angels?
Yes.
Maybe that's
me.
The lasting memory of Don Baylor I have.
Anyway, I remember Don Baylor as a manager for the Rockies. How about that?
Now you're talking. That's in my wheelhouse.
That's it. You know, to me, he's the Ray Rhodes of baseball. Guys that went,
yeah.
Oh, I'll never hit him. Wait a minute.
Oh,
and then they just, right?
Of whippersnappers can't keep up.
Oh, my goodness. Baseball history goes back to the year 2005. I give up.
All right, let's talk about Hank's favorite series, the Yankees and Detroit. And it's pretty much been beat into a drum. Newsflash, if you haven't heard, Derek Jeter is hurt. Was that the turning point, though, in the season, Hank? I mean, he was the only guy with the bat who could perform, but is his injury going to have a big impact on this series, or did it have an impact on the series as it's almost over, or were the Yankees doing with or without him?
You know what? A lot of people are going to put it on Derek Jeter's injury. But to me, I think that the Yankees have blown their wad, so to speak. Look at this Yankees team. If you go back, they had set a major league record for – you know, scoring three runs or more in a game, and I can't remember the number of games it was, but it was a major league record. And they were mashing the ball, okay? But as we know about baseball, we talk about this all the time, how teams get off to slow starts, and we'll say, well, they'll get it together, and they'll put it together, and they'll be there at the end, okay? Or we say, do a team peak, you know, so quick, or all of a sudden you're seeing just freakish numbers from players or from teams. But it has to balance out somewhere. When you look at these Yankee teams, you just see the way they were just mashing the ball all of a sudden. And this didn't just start in the playoffs. Right around the first part of September, man, they started to really taper off. And this is when the Orioles started to make their push. Okay? Late inning heroics by Ibanez, won a couple of games for them. And they went on because they were so far out in front at one time, and they got under the fence and won the East. I think to your point, it hurts an already tired Yankees team, and that's why I feel like it's going to be over soon. I don't think these guys are trying. They just can't find it no more. They blew it. That's it. It's going to take till next year. They'll be okay, but not this year.
What you got anything to add to this one, Mike?
No.
All right. Well, then I gotta get your opinion on this one, then, Mike. You gotta give me something here.
Right.
Media is killing Alex Rodriguez. He's not swinging. He's not hitting the ball. We got to do something. Joe Girardi does something. Then the story becomes A-Rod's not upset enough for us. We want a guy with more fire. You also got the media. Or I shouldn't say the media, but you got Joe Girardi. He's pulling Swisher out of the lineup. He's throwing in Brett Gardner, who hasn't played since started the game since April. What's going on with the Yankees and this lineup shuffling? Are you in favor of it? Or do you want Joe Girardi to keep it as is? What are your thoughts with what Girardi's doing with this Yankees lineup?
You know, given the makeup of his team, I think it's a sign of panic with Girardi at this point. But, you know, they should be. They struggled with the Orioles. They struggled all the way down the end of the season. They're obviously struggling with the Tigers. He needs to do something. However, with a team, a veteran-laden team like the Yankees, you know, you've got a pretty much a set lineup out there that you can go throughout. You can tweak a couple pieces out there. The A-Rod move by itself is probably enough to hopefully energize that team. But in the end, you got to go with the horses that got you there. And when you've got that much money invested in people and talent, I think he's throwing the kitchen sink at it. But, man, there's a lot of talent on the bench when you do that. and you're going beyond just motivating your team. At that point, you're really lowering your chances to win a game. So I think it's a move that I'll compare it to Joe Torre. I don't think Joe Torre would have ever done that. He would have said, listen, I'm going to go with my guns. I'm going to go with the guys that got me here, the guys that we pay and we've depended on for years. And if we don't make it, we don't make it. But I'm not going to go out there and play a game with my best players on the bench.
Yeah. What do you think, Hank? And well, let me throw this to you, Hank. I was listening to the A-Rod interview, like I mentioned. And he flat out said, I believe that the Yankees lineup is better when I'm in it. He's slumped as of late, but he was one of the few guys who got a hit in one of the last games he did play in. What do you think? Do you agree with Alex? Is the Yankees lineup better when he's in it?
You know what? I wouldn't expect him to say anything else. You know, I don't expect him to say, well, whatever the managers say. No, he's Alex Rodriguez, okay? So I expect him to say that. But, again, you can put him in there, but the numbers don't lie. Alex Rodriguez has struck out 12 times in his playoff series against right-handed pitching, okay? He's gotten one hit, all right? But he's not alone. No, he's not the bane of their existence. Robinson Cano is hitting a lot less, and so is Curtis Granderson. Okay, when you see your whole team, I'm talking about Nick Swisher too, you see the whole team can't hit, that tells you something. That's an epidemic going on right there. They all got hot at the same time, and they all got cold at the same time. And I don't blame Alex Rodriguez. In his position, like, hell, you know, I'm a better player on the field that I am off of it, and ain't nobody else doing nothing, so why I got to sit? I don't blame him for that. But, you know, I think that Girardi's trying to do something. You know, he's trying to find lightning in the bottle doing something. I feel like, I guess he looks like, if I don't do nothing, then I'm sitting here just watching us burn up. You know, is it a panic move? I don't know, but this has been going on now for over 6 weeks, and he knows that. He knows the pulse of his team, and he's trying to do something to shake them up.
Yeah, I agree with Mike 100%. I believe Girardi's panicking, and unfortunately I also think he's listening a little too much to that New York media, and he's kind of managing – what I see is he's managing to keep his job so the media is not questioning what he's doing. And to see that, all I have to do is look at this last game. I don't know if you guys stuck through to the end, but
of course,
the game ended with Phil Koch striking out Raul Ibanez. Now, statistically, let me back up. Girardi is always a guy who plays matchups. You see him pulling a pitcher when he's got two outs in the inning just to get that lefty-righty matchup. Girardi, he really sticks to these matchups, and anybody who watches the Yankees can see that. But he didn't do it last night so that he wouldn't be talked about in the media the next day. And I say that because he let Phil Koch, or he let Raul Ibanez bat against Phil Koch last night, and Ibanez struck out and was the last out of the game. Now, conventional wisdom says to pull Ibanez because he's horrible against left-handed batters. My dad, in fact, called me and asked me, was I worried about Ibanez giving the Yankees the lead last night because he's been on a hot streak? And I said, no, not at all. He can't hit left-handers. And I need not go any further than his 2012 stats against left-handers. He's batting 197 against left-handers with a 246 slugging percentage. So the numbers say he should not be out there against Phil Koch. And he probably should have pulled him for Nick Swisher or A-Rod to face the lefty. But he didn't do that because Ibanez is the guy that New York is fawning over right now. And the guy, you saw what happened, he struck out. So I do see the panic. I do see Girardi managing to not get talked about. And I don't think that's going to be a key to his success in Yankee land.
Yeah, but can you imagine if he had to pull Raul Ibanez or A-Rod, Jim Leland counters that and goes get a right-hander. A-Rod, heaven forbid, strikes out. Now he's really on the hot seat. He rolled the dice. He said, this is the darling of the playoffs right now. I said, I can live and die with this move, you know, especially against Phil Koch, who's batting at, who's earned run average. Batters earn run average against him, lefties, this year, about 340.
Hey, Hank, maybe you didn't hear me. 197 batting average. Alex Rodriguez is batting better than that in this playoff series.
I know.
197
I know.
Against lefties.
I'm telling you, if you're going on stats, then you got to see what lefties' batting averages against Phil Koch was this year. It was over 300. That's what,
no, that
you know,
right.
So I mean, you
no,
can
right
go either
over,
way
over
that one. I think that when you look at it, Raul Ibanez has just been pulling the Yankees out of their backside this whole postseason. You know, I understand conventional wisdom. This was very unconventional.
Well, to your point, and I hear you, but, you know, I'm a numbers guy. I got to go to the numbers. Raul Ibanez hits very well in Yankee Stadium because of that short porch. He doesn't hit so well on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Way this year, he only hit .269. So at home, he bats. I'm sorry, he hit .208 away. .208 on the road, .273 at home, and it's all to do with that short porch in Yankee Stadium. So those games, he was jacking the ball out of the park at the end of the game. Those were tailor-made spots for Ibanez. Last night against the lefty, he was set up for failure.
Right. Well, you know what? Quite frankly, I'm glad he batted. Okay, so for my glad he batted. So I'm here. I'm not here. I'm glad he batted.
And I can't argue with that. I'm just saying. I would like to see, like Mike said, at some point in time, you got to stick with the guys who got you there. And I trust A-Rod or Nick Swisher running into one way before I trust Eric. What's his name? Eric Chavez?
Yeah.
Way before I trust him to run into one. But that being the case, and we've kind of beat A-Rod to a pulp already as it is. But Phil, who was on with us last week, he asked me if the Yankees ate a majority of A-Rod's contract, say all but $5 million of it a year, would you want him on your squad? And I hesitated. Don't know if I gave him a succinct answer, so I'm going to ask you, Hank. At $5 million a year, would you take A-Rod on your squad?
Oh, that's a very good question. you know what? I think that I said this last week. I think that A-Rod hasn't shown anything this year. You know, he really hasn't. I mean, he's been injured for the majority of the year. When you become an older player, and you know, and you can't stay healthy, these kind of things happen. He hasn't been swinging the bat like he has in the past. You know, he had such his first part of his career was so great that he's just adding on to it at this point. I would have a hard time with that with him. You know, he's not showing right now that he's even DH material. You know, and that's
just the playoff.
Huh?
I mean, you're talking just playoffs. I mean, he did hit .273 this year,
okay.
With a over .350 OBP. So,
but you're talking about in a hyphenated season for him. Okay, you have to also factor in the injury bug with him. A-Rod has been hurt the last couple of seasons. Okay, and you have to ask yourself: can he be healthy all year, even for maybe 130 ball games? And in those 130 ball games, can he help you? And then, if you are a contending team, you have to look at his playoff, his playoffs. Okay, I say no. I don't know if I would take a leap on A-Rod. You know, I would look to get somebody that I think can be with me for the next 3 or 4 years and contribute. And you have to ask yourself: is A-Rod going to do anything but diminish over the next 5 years?
And Mike, would you take him on your squad for $5 million a year?
Yeah, absolutely. Jason Giambi still makes $5 million a year. Yes, I take A-Rod.
and Phil, to answer your question, if you're still listening, brother, I agree with Mike. I've come around. I would take him for $5 million a year. And we got about 3 minutes left, but I got a quandary with these Tigers. Hank, real quick. What are you doing with Jose Valverde? Is he your closer? You going Phil Cloak as your closer? You going closer by committee? What are we to do with Valverde? And for those of you who don't know, Valverde's been a mess this postseason. He has almost given away 2 games that he was brought in to shut down, and he did not. And Tiger fans are up in arms. Hank, what are you doing with Jose?
Well, from what I heard, they're working on his mechanics. And I think that
What are you doing?
What am I doing?
Is he still your closer? You going to close it by committee? Phil Cloak, what are you doing?
Oh, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give him one more shot. And if he's not there, then you have to close by committee. I'm saying
you
that.
You give one more shot with the World Series on the line?
You bring him in as a short relief. You bring him in like in the 6th inning of a game, and you give him a short leash. You don't close him. You bring him in a shortly relief and see what he's got going. I think
right, you got to break it down for the people, man. The people want to know.
Huh?
You
I think
break
you
it
still
down
have
to
pitch him. You still have
okay.
to pitch him? You going to just get rid of him now?
I'm just asking a question. Mike, what are you doing with Valverde?
I think this even further highlights the point that for 90% of the teams in baseball, the closer position is the most overrated one that there is on the team. You know, very often it's not the ninth inning that wins you. It's that two-out guy you get in the 7th or in the 8th that does it. And unless you've got a dominant guy or a guy who's pitching dominant at the time, you know, Valverde had those moments this year. But I'll use Aroldis Chapman as a guy when he was on his game, man, it was done. But beyond those 2 or 3 guys that are pitching at that level, there's a lot of guys who can do it, and you don't owe it to a closer who doesn't have his stuff in the playoffs to pitch him at the 9th inning. Continue to pitch him. If he's
right.
not getting on, throw somebody else out there.
You don't
here,
pitch
here,
him at the 9th right now.
I agree 100% with what Mike said. I want Leland to be playing to the matchups, not to the inning, and we're going to put a stamp on this episode. So come back next week. We will be breaking down the World Series. I believe the World Series actually starts on Wednesday. So we'll give you who to look out for. We're going to talk about who's going to win. What guys we think could have a big series. So do check us out next week. It'll be one of our last shows of the year. So we'll be breaking it down for you next week. Thanks for tuning in, y'all. Peace.
All right.
Yeah, next week it'll be my week. Next week it'll be my turn. You guys there? Hello? Hello?